Which sci-fi universe has the most formidable army or military force, and what makes them supreme? Welcome to the Grand Hill Chronicles podcast. My name is Don Bishop, and I write as T.S. Pejmon. So right at the start of the episode, you heard the question of the week, or a question of the week. So today's guest for the interview is Pat Haldren, who writes sci-fi. And we had a great conversation about a bit about sci-fi weapons and different aspects of what might be possible. Anyway, I'll leave the interview to speak for itself, and I know you'll enjoy that. But as is my new habit, at the end of the episode, I invited her to create a character for inclusion in the Grand Hill Chronicles. I'm talking on the podcast. For inclusion in the Nightshade Unicorn saga. And I tell my guests, you know, this character will appear on page at least once. She decided to create a pet, an animal, and you'll hear that later. So I love the idea. I'm definitely going to include this animal. Again, I reserve the right to modify names to fit the world a little better, and I told her that. But in honor of that, and in honor of, hold up, I'll come back to that. It's my birthday this week, and as a, you know, kind of to celebrate that, I am going to list the ebook for Nightshade Unicorn Book 1 Forerunner for free across the internet, for, I don't know, probably a week, maybe longer. So go look for that. Go look for that free ebook, and I'm going to discount Book 2 Guardian to $2.99 for a brief period. So in honor of her selection of a character being an animal, and specifically a ferret, and in honor of my birthday, I'm going to offer a second question of the week, and you can answer either one to win a physical print book. And not just mine, you know, you can go look at the menu, I've told you before. But you can choose either question, that one, because we talked about it, if I recall, we talked about it. I wrote it down. So I think we talked about it. Maybe we didn't, and I wrote this down ahead of time. Anyway, I had another idea, and I wanted to give this question of the week. So you have two questions of the week. Choose either one and guess a number between 1 and 1,000. And the other question of the week is, if a wizard offered you an enchanted item for your birthday, what would you choose? And why would you choose that specific type of animal familiar? You know, okay, so you don't have to say it's an animal familiar, but I would love to hear about what animal you would choose. Maybe it's a cow, maybe it's a parrot. I don't know. You tell me. Or maybe you have a bag of holding, so you can just throw anything you need in there, and you can always be able to carry whatever you need to have with you. Speaking of the giveaway and guessing a number, so last, I hesitate to say, okay, before I get into the numbers, the last winner we had for the print book giveaway was Debbie, and you can see that in my Discord server. And private messaging me, she selected to receive a copy of Forerunner. So that was, she won the question of the week from, I'm looking at my computer screen. Audacity just disappeared. Okay, it is still recording. She won the question of the week and drawing whatever from two episodes ago. And then I posed a new question of the week last episode. And that number was the number that I wrote down was 248. Whoever got closest to that wins the drawing. And if that person guessed either the letter R or before or after, so that would be Q or S, so Q or R or S, then they get to choose two books with the two-book power-up, whatever. Because I'm on the road, I don't have my normal setup. I can't use the computer on the internet unless I like go to the library. So I generated the random number and letter for next week on my phone previously. I've already written them down in my little book. And that's that. So announcements wise, basically the drawing, I am on the road. I attended StoryCon last weekend and it was good. I met a lot of other authors of fantasy who write clean fantasy. And excuse me, you know, kind of, it's good to network so that if somebody has read my books and they want more, or maybe my books aren't their cup of tea, but they want something in that genre, I know other authors that I can send them to and say, hey, you know, check out this author's works. So it's great to have that networking. And this coming weekend, I am at Confinement. And so at the moment, I'm still in Utah after StoryCon, which was in Salt Lake City. And tomorrow morning, I'm going to head out for Tennessee. Just tomorrow morning as I record. So I'm recording on February 25th. You're hearing this for the first time on February 26th. And yeah, don't forget to answer the question of the week. Either like, what is the sci-fi franchise that has the most formidable army or military force and what makes them supreme? Or if a wizard offered you a birthday present of your choice, some enchanted item, what would it be? And why would you choose that item? And I will love it if you tell me about your choice of animal familiars, but you can choose any magical item. And that's it. So I'll see you next time. Go download Nightshade Unicorn Forerunner. It should be free. I say should. So I can make it free instantly pretty much anywhere except for on Amazon. And so I'm going to, after I record this, I'm going to go to the library. I'm going to do my video editing. But first, I'm going to change the prices for my ebooks. I'm going to make Forerunner for free. And I'm going to set Guardian to $2.99. And that will be instantaneous on Grendhill.media, on several other websites. But Amazon, everything goes through approval, right? And actually, since I'm not in Kindle Unlimited, then I'll have to email them and say, hey, can you do a price match? Because my book is free everywhere else. And that might take them a couple of days. But yeah, it's Tuesday now. I'm really hoping to have it free for Friday, which is coincidentally this season's Stuff Your Kindle with Fantasy event. I'm not officially participating in that, but I thought it'd be a good idea, along with my birthday as well, to make that offering. Yeah, that's it. Enjoy the interview, and I'll see you next time. All right, Pat, welcome to the show. Why don't you let the viewers or listeners get to know you? What's your background? Where do you come from? You write stories.
Right. I'm from here in the Texas, and I've lived all over Texas, so that influences a lot about what I write, in that I use the South as set.
I actually have I didn't tell you this. I don't talk about it a ton, but I have a series planned taking place in Dallas.
Cool.
Because I grew up here.
Oh, yeah.
And so this series is going to be quasi-urban fantasy, but anyway.
Okay.
So go ahead.
Sounds cool. So I'm Pat Haldren, and I write mostly science fiction and fantasy. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I've done the whole thing where I wrote all my life, blah, blah, blah. And but it wasn't until I kind of think of it as a blessing that I got cancer and I had to quit work. I went on disability.
Uh-huh.
And that gave me time to start taking writing classes, you know, the things that I really wanted to do and I was passionate about. So I did that, but then I also went to work as I worked in quality control all my life. So I just naturally segued into proofreading, copy editing, editing, uh-huh. things like that. But I still wasn't writing to publish.
Uh-huh.
I was writing, but it was just, you know. And finally, I did a lot of work from home and stuff. And finally, my husband said, why are you working? Mm-hmm. Why don't you quit and focus on your book? Because you're never going to get done this way. You know, because you're on the computer all day. Mm-hmm. And by the time you're done, you don't want to be back on the computer,
uh-huh.
you know, and spend hours writing.
Yeah.
So that was kind of getting me down. And so I did. And that's when I really started focusing on my stories. And then I had to figure out, well, how do you focus just on one story? Well, how do you do this? How do you do that? And so I started really joining different groups that had people that I considered mentors. You know, not just my next door neighbor who was also a writer, and we'd sit around and there's like the blind leading the blind.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
And that's where I think things started connecting. And then our writing groups started producing anthologies. Each year we thought, we're going to do local anthologies of our writers and then the science fiction, fantasy, speculative fiction, and put them out ourselves. And in that way, we learned formatting novels and formatting books and going through the whole Amazon process or somebody else, you know.
And you'll have to give me some way to give me the links to those.
I'll give you the link to
my
website.
I'll put it in the show notes. Okay.
Okay.
Yeah.
My terrible website. It's just my name, pathaldren.net.
Straightforward.
Straightforward. And I have all the books on the front page, and I have stories in each book. And I also worked on the covers, some of the cover art. Mm-hmm. And then I did the laying out because I'm anal about that. And... and learned a lot, and I'm really good at that. So, in fact, our next to the last one, was a Short and Twisted Christmas Tales. Mm. And Brad Foster did the artwork for that. And he's in Dallas. He's a Dallas artist, and he does a lot of book covers and a lot of fantasy.
I'll have to look him up.
Yeah, and so we were really proud of that one. And I kind of started with the short stories and realized how hard they were. Mm-hmm. And every time I'd write a short story, everyone would say, this needs to be a novel. This needs to be a novel. And I'm like, but that takes so much time.
Right.
I wanted the immediate gratification of having something written and something done. You know, how writers say, you know, I like being written. I have written, mm-hmm. but not necessarily I am writing.
Yeah. Yeah.
So... I realized that real quick. And so I just started on my novels. And I've got like 5 in work. And then I had to learn, oh, I better focus on one. I'm never going to finish because I'm very, I guess I'm ADD or something. I got to work on everything. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I learned to focus. And so I finally finished the first draft. I'm in the editing phase now. And I think before the end of the year, I'll have it out. I've already got the cover art. I've got a guy that's going to do my website with my cover artist, the theme, you know, so it's not just, hey, here's me and here's my short stories type thing, just a straightforward website. And I'm really enjoying the process, maybe too much, instead of getting things, you know, you have to get things done.
Yes.
And so... I'm learning. I'm just learning as I go. But I've been so much into different writing workshops. And when I was going to college, I was the one that if the instructor had something to do, I had to teach the class. You know, so I just got to where I'm used to teaching the class, and I would fill in for them on their days off and stuff like that. So I thought, well, I can do this. And so I started teaching on little niche subjects. Little niche, like, what is a genre? I would talk to writers, and they're like, well, I'm going to write science fiction, but they didn't know what the tropes were. They didn't. They knew from reading, but they didn't understand that these things, it's like you're feeding someone their favorite food. And if you don't feed them that favorite food, they're not going to like you anymore.
Yeah.
Right? So you've got to feed them those tropes.
Yeah. And the, like, originality is a great thing, but you need to have it in measured quantities. You could write something very original and nobody's going to like it.
Yeah.
Because
if you don't give them what they need, women read romance because that's what they want. They want that romantic element. So you better give it to them. Or don't label it a romance, mm-hmm. right? Same thing with science fiction and fantasy and every other genre, westerns, things like that. So I ended up going to LER. What was it called? There's a bookstore in Amsterdam, the American bookstore, and it's in Amsterdam in The Hague. And they asked me if I would come teach class mm-hmm. in each of their bookstores about it, because they had writers asking, how can I break into American fiction? Because they don't have the same kind of like requirements like we do here. When you're putting out a book, it doesn't mean you have to write it this way, but, you know, like the hero's journey or Matt Haig's steps to writing a story.
Uh-huh.
And they didn't understand tropes, and they couldn't figure out why they couldn't get through the American market, because that's where they're going to sell.
And I want to say that with tropes, it's not that something else couldn't work.
Right.
But that these tropes are an established path to produce something that does work and the audience knows how to consume right. it. I kind of felt, and this is not words at all, but the Disney's Frozen, mm-hmm. the music, I felt, had a different sound to it. That different from other movies that have been big titles. And it's kind of like, you know, I wondered, how am I supposed to feel about this? I like it. It's yeah. just, it's a different sound. And it sounded maybe a little bit incomplete with the orchestration. But it wasn't incomplete. It was just different. And they did
You don't think it was a rushed job, or...
Yeah, it could have been, but I don't think so. Yeah, it was just.
Well, I know the kids
a different
loved
style.
It. Yeah,
just
my
a
grandkids loved it, but I like very few Disney, because to me they're very predictable. Mm-hmm. When it's unpredictable, that's when I like it.
Yeah.
Or if it's something like Aladdin, where you know, and it appeals to the. They always try to appeal to the parents as well. But yeah, a trope can be like a cliche, but you don't want to treat it like a cliche. Mm-hmm. You know, you have to make it work in your story. But, I mean, you need to have something there within the first three pages. We need to know if you couldn't look at the cover at all and just picked it up with no cover, we need to know what kind of book it is and what kind of story we're going to be part of. Is it going to be dark, mm-hmm. light? Or whatever, and then we need to know, you know, is it in space? Is it on another world? Is it urban fantasy? Is it, you know, on Earth? In the future, in the past, something. We've got to be grounded and set up in the story so that we can fall into those characters in that setting and then just go with it.
Yeah. So I wanted to... So you have a book coming out. It's in the process.
Mm-hmm.
And there was something else that you mentioned. But both of these things bring us back to what we talked about when you were up at my table in the vendor room. So you write sci-fi. Is your book sci-fi?
Yes.
Okay.
It's a this one is more fantasy. And then I have some that are science fiction. And so I'm just, you know, I thought this would... I was writing an epic, and I took a big class in epic fantasy with David Farland, the fantasy writer, and I realized this is a heck of a lot of work. Why don't I learn some more about writing first and then come back to this, because I want it to be a really good book. It's off-world. Yeah. I had to develop the pantheon. I had to develop their religion. I had to develop the the fantasy characters, because I don't want it to be like, oh, it's the Greek gods, or oh, it's the Norse gods, you know. So I've got to do something different and yet still be something that readers enjoy.
And so you mentioned you kind of write soft, and you were interested in writing hard sci-fi, but you're kind of limited by knowledge of the technical aspects and side of things. And that kind of struck a chord with me, because I kind of feel the same way about... Okay, so I'm talking over myself, but... those technical things. And I spoke with the woman next to me, and I'm not good with names. I don't remember her name. At the next table, at the table for the PCON convention, about science fiction versus fantasy. And I had a conversation with somebody online in the past couple of days, how I said that science fiction is a subset of fantasy. And you could back up.
Oh, that was awful.
Let's say fantasy with lowercase f. Or, in other words, if you are stepping outside of realistic fiction, it's fantasy. It is
in a way, fantasy. Yes, it is a fantasy. Anything that's not real.
The industry term for what I am right now calling fantasy is speculative fiction. Mm-hmm. You're speculating, what if this thing could be so? What if this thing were real? Strictly speaking, in a strict sense of the word, that's fantasy. Mm-hmm. And so science fiction is a type of fantasy. It's fantasy with a technological or futuristic nexus or aesthetic. Whereas fantasy is a subset of lowercase fantasy with a magical nexus, something of the sort. But... Okay. I'll say that they are both speculative fiction.
Well, nowadays when you hear, especially the older, when I hear the word sci-fi, I think media, movies, games, things like that. Because when I grew up, SF was science fiction or speculative fiction. As speculative science fiction came first in our 40s, 50s, 60s, like that. And then the fantasy grew out of that as a growth. You know, it's kind of born in a genre.
Yeah, yeah,
so,
in popularity.
Yeah, so when I think sci-fi, I'm thinking, it's Star Wars or a movie, right? But when I'm thinking books, I'm thinking SF. It's science fiction or speculative fiction. And speculative fiction is that umbrella term of, it covers horror, it covers everything, you know? So you can blend it all together, you could mash it all up. But we didn't start out that way, you know.
Mm-hmm. So, I think you mentioned like writing space battles or weapons and.
Yeah, I love some military science fiction, and but for me to write it, I need to learn more. You know, why you can't have a railgun on a spaceship like we have now? Mm-hmm. Well, because you're going to go the other way. Because it does this, right?
Well, I mean, you could have a railgun on a spaceship, but it will...
You'd have to have something to take up for
that. It's going to push you the other direction.
Right, you're going to end up going backwards. Unless something else happens.
But, I mean, the spaceship has a lot more mass than the round flying out of it.
Maybe. But with no gravity, anything that pushes you, you're going that way. Of course, you're going to have to stabilize, and you're going to have engines and things like that. But, you know, you want to make it more futuristic, so you would have a different type of railgun or whatever. You know, and you're not going to, like you're on an airplane, you're not going to shoot a Glock at somebody and put a hole in the plane.
Yeah.
Right? So the same thing with a spaceship.
Yeah. And, like, in the Marines, they trained us when you board, so we did this training. We boarded an Osprey, and but everybody had an M16, and you specifically point the barrel down because everything running the propellers and whatnot overhead.
You want to be target.
So right. If you're an idiot and you negligently discharge your weapon, put the hold down so you don't take us all down from the sky.
Right.
But yeah, this is the question of the railgun on a spaceship is a wonderful example of if you're gonna write sci-fi and you want to make it kind of a hard sci-fi where you want to be backed up in scientific knowledge, it can be challenging. To my own horn, I considered myself to be fairly intelligent. I think I can understand things fairly well. But I'm not a physicist. I have not learned all the things. I'm not an electrical engineer. I do not have that training. I have learned a little bit of orbital mechanics because I had to understand I had to understand how satellites work. And basically, most people have heard of a geosynchronous satellite where it stays over the same point on the Earth. And if you think about it, that can only be over the equator.
Right.
Because, let's not get into the specifics of it.
Yeah.
Because physics.
Right.
Because if you are anywhere else, the Earth is not going to rotate with you in the same path. You're going to have to do some kind of wavy pattern.
And everything.
Otherwise, you have to constantly burn fuel.
Yeah.
To hold a position.
Well, it's like the Starlink satellites. They're all over the place, but they're also, a lot of them are falling all the time because they wear out quickly and they can't stay in that spot all the time. Yeah.
I actually, I felt dumb this week. There's a meme. Maybe you've seen it. It says, the next time you feel like you're really angry at somebody, you just want to launch them into the sun, take a step back and think about this, because it costs way less fuel to launch them into outer space instead. Mm-hmm. And I was like, wait, no, because if you just slow down, you're going to fall out of Earth's orbit and you're going to fall closer to the sun. Well, hold on. You'll wind up, long story short, you're going to pick up a lower orbit and you're going to wind up still in orbit. You have to cancel all of your orbital velocity in order to fall into the sun. There's no such thing as spiraling into the sun, because instead of spiraling in, you'll accelerate and zoom right past.
Yeah.
And anyway,
you'll become an asteroid.
Yeah. So if before thinking about this and really considering the question, if I had written a scene involving these things, I would have gotten it wrong.
Yeah.
So.
Well, that's what these conventions are good for. That is, you can pick people's brains. It's like I specifically came here this year. I usually go almost every year to the local cons and stuff. And a lot, of course, depends on how much money I've got and which cons I want to attend. But John Henry, who writes as Jack Campbell, writes military science fiction, and I was really impressed with his stories because he didn't have to explain what he was doing unless it was something esoteric, and then he would set up a conversation about it, you know, so that you learned as you went. And it didn't sound like an as-you-know-Bob thing.
You set up a conversation between characters?
Between characters, so that you're learning as they are discussing a subject, and then it's not just a, you know, something everybody knows and or where you're giving a bunch of data and then go on with the story, you know, builds it into the story. And so just things I learned there, like why and when do you call a starship port and starboard? What difference is it going to make in space? Well, out in space where there's no galaxy, interstellar, nothing. Okay, you know, it's going to be kind of hard to say unless you've designated a point to mm-hmm. to reference. But he said, when you're in like a solar system, you got port and starboard. Well, where's starboard? Toward the star.
Okay.
Right? That's easy. And aft is always backwards, so, you know, the other end.
So so in his works, so on here on Earth with water ships, we have the terms port and starboard that are based on the North Star. The mm-hmm. starboard is the side that's towards the North Star as you're sailing west. Right. And if you turn the ship around and now you're sailing east, well, they still call that side the starboard, even though the star is now on that side.
Yeah.
But are you saying that he doesn't?
It would be the same thing if you're in our solar system.
Okay.
And let's say the ship is going from Earth to Saturn or something. Okay, as they're going, whatever side is star side, sun side, is starboard. And you're going to turn around and go the other way. Did he say it was starboard? So he was saying it was starboard on the side of the sun.
Okay.
And so whatever they did, they always knew which one.
Okay.
Because otherwise they had no reference.
Yeah.
I mean, you can't use the North Star if you're out in space because you're not really going to know unless you can sync it somehow with your computers where you're going to be. You may not even be in this universe. So, or in this galaxy. So what are you going to do? And I thought that was really interesting. And yet because he was in the Navy and for so long, he applied those things to space. And so now I'm wondering, well, now that we have a space force, are they going to do the same thing? Hmm. You know, has he come in a little ahead of his time and used the same things?
I mean, I don't know.
No.
But I would think that we would stick to the tradition just because it's something that we can build off of. Where what the layman would call the right side, we would call the starboard, and it doesn't matter if it's in space. It's how it's originally oriented while it is designed and built. We're going to call one side the starboard, but then there's the question of up and down, mm-hmm. which is introduced by being in space, and you don't have that question on Earth because it's automatically answered. There is up and down,
right.
If those are too confused, you have a problem.
Yeah. I don't know how they would do up and down. Depends on whether they have gravity on their ship or mm-hmm. are they on the ISS. Well, I guess they could do up away from the Earth or away from their floor or for whatever thing they're on. But that's not, you know, that changes. That.
It's like, yeah, consider the old space shuttle. Because it had these windows mm-hmm. that are on the top. But if you want a good view of the planet,
you got to turn upside down.
You'd be upside down. And now which way is up?
That's right. So it all changes when you get out of gravity.
Since I was a teenager, I have occasionally joked when somebody says, what's up? I would provide the answer. Up is usually considered to be the direction leading away from the center of the currently prevalent gravitational field. And that has always held until now.
Yes.
Like a spaceship upside down. Well, which way is considered up? Because literally the direction leading away from the currently prevalent gravitational field is through the floor. Mm-hmm. Okay.
So those are good questions.
We'll geeking out, geeking out over here. Back to weapons. So the railgun on a ship. I mean, you could, but you'd have to solve things. You can't just.
Well, they had talked about doing some kind of, instead of having like a physical barrel, mm-hmm. doing some kind of a force field that would absorb the whatever needed to be done to get the weapon or the bullet, whatever you want to use, mm-hmm. to go. Right? But then.
Well, you could have thrusters on mm-hmm. the opposite side of the ship.
Yeah, having to push.
Compensating.
That's a lot of energy. And so it depends on how developed is their energy. Is it set or do they have unlimited? Mm-hmm. So.
Yeah. Well, and I mean, anything that you fire is going to cause an equally opposite reaction. Even energy weapons. If you fire an energy weapon, it's just there's a lot less of what's the terminology? A push. There's going to be a much smaller push because the energy weapon isn't trying to push the ship. It's trying to you're trying to burn a hole in the ship rather than punch a hole.
Yeah, you're doing something with the energy, which is what they do now, like in Star Trek and Star Wars and things like that. But those, you know, if you're going to do ships in battle in space, you're going to see what's coming if you're very far away.
Uh-huh.
Unless you're very, very close, which I didn't realize. I should have known. It's logical, mm-hmm. right? But so if you're, say somebody's at the moon, and they come around.
If it's an energy weapon.
Yeah,
light, you're not going to see it coming because news of it cannot arrive faster than the light itself.
But you didn't attend the FinCon that showed that they can do that.
Okay.
They have in Washington State? I can't remember what university. Showed
with
light arriving before it left in their experiment. But it was only in a minute bits that they can do that. They can't make it on a big scale because it takes too much energy right now.
Well, and also, what's it called? Entanglement.
Mm-hmm. Now that
and there has been some news there, and I haven't kept up with the news in years, so I may be behind the times. But the articles that I read years ago insisted that entanglement, although it would cause an instantaneous change to the paired particle, would not enable faster than light communication. I guess I never got a good enough explanation. I never understood why.
What I didn't understand is, how are you going to pair it?
Well, you pair it together and then you pull it apart.
Right. But how are you going to get it to the other ship?
You deploy sensors ahead of time. So you have sensors near the ship. And, of course, if they're firing lasers and the laser is fully focused, and that there's no stray light, these sensors aren't going to see it.
Anytime we make a technological advance, there soon comes something to prevent it. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like Israel has our defense shield, what they call a defense shield around their country.
The Iron Dome.
Yeah, something like that. Well, they have ways to defeat that. Yet the easiest way is just bombard it because it can't get everything it wants. Mm-hmm. You know, but so I think expensive. No matter what we do, what we think of, there will always be something soon after that will make that null. Mm-hmm. You know, it's going to even out in the end, which is kind of like the universe. But so it's really interesting. I went to that firearm panel, and they were talking about glass bullets, ice bullets. What kind of weapons would you use on a ship, on a starship, inside, outside, you know, that sort of thing. And I was just pages writing, you know, because it was so much information. And they're all former cops or former military. So just all kinds of things I didn't know, like, a cop is not going to be the most accurate shooter. Whereas someone in the military, a sniper, someone trained in their specific weapons will be. But then you've got to know, well, how far is that weapon going to shoot? And,
right.
You know, what's it good for?
And also, you could always have a cop who's going to be the most accurate shooter.
You can.
Because he's the outlier.
Anybody could, yeah.
He's going to be the one who took his off days mm-hmm. on the range to train more.
Or maybe he just grew up shooting. It's like I grew up in the country, and my dad had weapons, right? We're Texans.
Uh-huh. And I think we need to vacate the room.
Do we? Okay. Oh, no. Okay. And then he taught us how to shoot just a couple of weapons, and we did for fun. And then, you know, he's always saying, don't point a gun unless you're going to shoot it and all these things. Mm-hmm. Well, then I didn't think anything about it after I grew up because I had to work and do the family thing and everything. And then my husband says, former Marine, says, let's go to a range and take a class and shoot. I said, okay, why not? You know, because I don't know all about weapons. So I took the class, and then we went over and we did some target practice. And the guy says, before I even finished, he goes, oh, you could pass with that. You can get your license with that. I'm like, oh. He said, do you want to? I go, no, maybe next time. You know. So but I got to practice with the weapons, with the different types of guns and the weight. Mm-hmm. You know, things I didn't think about before. You know, how heavy is this and how light is this and how does it shoot and does it kick up and does it, you know, is it like nothing? It's just a little pea shooter or what is it, you know?
Yeah.
So I really learned about in real life, you may think you know something, but you don't really know it till you feel it. Mm-hmm. You know, until you've actually done it. And I think that's what makes good writers.
Yeah. And like as a Marine, things that I mean, yeah, kind of the same thing. I had the Marine Corps put me on the range and I learned how to shoot a rifle. And then a few years later, I learned how to shoot a pistol. And, you know, I'd shot those things before a little bit. Mm-hmm. But just barely. I didn't have
enough muscle
memory.
We had 22 at home. He had a couple of pistols. He even had a Colt 45. You know, my dad had these things, and he had stuff handed down from his dad. He didn't buy anything new. You know, so that's all we knew.
Yeah. So I had annual experience mm-hmm. Shooting an M16, shooting 5.56 rounds. I had one-time experience shooting a 249, M249, which is a machine gun, shooting 5.56 rounds. And again, one-time experience shooting an M240 Bravo, which is a machine gun shooting 7.62 rounds. And then 7 years, 8 years later, I had repeat experience with the machine guns. And then one-time experience shooting a Mark 19, which is a machine gun, shooting 40-millimeter grenades. Same kind of thing. I got to pull the lanyard for an M777, which is I'm a bad Marine. I'm having trouble remembering the caliber. I think it's 150 millimeters. It's in that range.
I don't know.
It might be 160, 165. I think it's one. It's approximately 150. So it's a big boy. So I got to fire a couple of those. And anyway, so it wasn't until 2020 that I shot pistols other than a 9mm. I was at a 6-month-long cyber training course in Georgia, and somebody at church had room on his property and had several handguns, and a few other Marines and I went, and we got to shoot, and I got to shoot some smaller and some bigger. Like, there's this one, it's like...
Which one did
really
you like
kicks.
The best? Which one was more fun?
Well, I like... What's comfortable for me is the 9mm that I learned on for the Marines. I can do that, and I do it well, according to my shooting badge.
You get your little badges? Well, that's my husband has some in a little tin can.
Yeah.
He keeps, and I'm like, look at these badges. You need to put them up on the wall. No, I just keep them in the can. I don't want anybody to know.
And I'm not like a competition shooter,
no.
You know, but among those... Wow, I can't speak, but I'm a little bit better than average. Now I'm downplaying it again. So I've always shot expert.
Yeah.
Not nowadays. So the Marine Corps changed their shooting, their rifle qualification program a few years ago, and it makes it a little bit harder to get expert. I've only had the opportunity to shoot that one once. I still got expert, but I was in danger of getting sharpshooter that time. The pistol program is scored on a scale of 400. And, in Harry Potter, the Quidditch score, you might as well drop the zero at the end because it never changes. The pistol program, you could divide by two. Mm-hmm. Like, the smallest increment of score is two. So, 1 year I got 398. One round was not where it needed to be to get 400. And last year I got a 396.
That's pretty.
So, anyway, I'm off on a tangent. So I shoot pretty well.
Yeah.
Not like some guys. I'm not a competition shooter.
Right.
But that one, that Magnum or whatever it was called, I'm not a weapons geek. I don't remember all these things.
Me either.
But that really had some kick.
Oh, yeah.
And I would not have anticipated that. And how to describe that, wouldn't have known it very well.
So. Yeah. It's fun, though. I enjoy the weapons, shooting the weapons. I don't enjoy shooting anything live. You know, that's the whole thing with me, is I didn't go into the military because I was like, I don't want to shoot anybody.
Yeah.
I just can't, unless,
yeah,
you know, unless it's really, it was at the end of Vietnam War when I came out of high school. So I didn't have to go. I didn't feel obligated, you know, but I had thought about it seriously. Because of all the tests they did in high school, you know, I had the military coming at me every which way. And I'm like, no. I said, can you promise me I'm not going to shoot anybody? No, we can't because of it. I heard of that. No, I've not done that. But I enjoy it. And I enjoy learning about it because it's always fodder for my story, you know, no matter what or how detailed it is. It's always fodder. And I've got to work out in my character, she doesn't use weapons, but she's going to have some used against her. Now, I don't want to do like a Tomb Raider thing where they can do anything. They're superheroes and nothing, you know, there's no consequences type thing. So I've got to figure out, well, what is this guy going to use? What would he normally use? Who is he? And how is this other character, she turns into a fantasy character. She turns into an angel, but it's not really an angel. It's a whole thing. It ends up being more scientific. Spoiler alert.
Yeah.
It ends up being more scientific than that because I don't want to hit the religious button, especially in this day and age. And because then nobody'd buy my book.
Yeah.
You're going to
make some people mad or happy. And
yeah, you're not going to please everyone. So everything has a scientific background to it. But I've got to figure out how she's going to survive that a human, normal human wouldn't. You know, so without making it to Disney type or, you know, Marvel. I can't stand most of the Marvel stuff because I'm not into the superhero, you can't kill me type of thing because I've got so much power. I like some of the character development they've done. But Superman, things like that, even as comics, I wasn't uninterested in. I like the Fantastic Four because I like the Rock guy then. I like him. But because he was more of a fantasy character. Right? He was a rock.
Yeah.
Who's Rock? Who's Rock? So you've got to figure out when you're writing, how is this plausible? Doesn't have to be probable. It doesn't have to be impossible. But it has to be plausible, you know.
Kind of believable with
it. Yeah, you want to believe because you're in the story, and your character's in your story, and your character wants to believe what's going on in this world, because it's not going to happen in the real world. So you have to, but you have to set it up where it's at least plausible that that would happen. And that's, man, that's hard. That's really hard. Yeah.
Well, I did want to catch something else that I saw on the program.
Yeah.
So we should probably wind up anyway.
Sure.
It's been long enough. But I would like to invite you to create a character for my Nightshade Unicorn series. And I reserve the right to modify it to fit within the world. But this character will appear on page at least once.
Okay.
And maybe more.
Like we talked about before, I really like ferrets.
Uh-huh.
And I think they're really special characters. I used to raise ferrets. And so I'd like you to put a ferret of some kind.
Okay.
It doesn't have to be the earth ferret.
And do you have a name for this ferret?
My name? I have no idea. I just went blank. I don't know, Horatio.
Okay. And I'll modify that for
sure.
For the
world. Because I'm a big Horatio Hornblower fan.
I'll base a name on Horatio.
Yeah. I'm a big Horatio Hornblower fan. So I'm rereading the Lewis books and the Horatio Hornblower series and then and watching the shows. So
okay.
The movies and that's just in my head right now.
All right, yeah.
That'd be great. I want to know
which
one it is. So when next time I read it...
There's going to be a ferret.
It's going to be fancy
and
ferret?
I'll have to put you in the acknowledgments.
Or in the little...
In the front of the book.
Okay.
So, I haven't really talked about that piece, but for my podcast guests, making up characters, I'll have to identify
them. Yeah, you have to remember what they are,
I mean, they're all on record. So,
Let me do the same thing to you.
Okay.
Mine's an urban fantasy.
Uh huh.
It's not on another planet. It's everyday world, except these people were aliens eons and eons and eons ago, and humans thought they were the Nephilim. They're kind of like the Nephilim because they had these powers and junk from the old back when it was all magic back then. You know, so it has to be religious if it's. They don't understand anything. But they've managed to live. And there's only like 5 pure left aliens. They've all interbred and stuff like that. So they've decided to genetically bring their species back.
Okay.
And then somehow figure out how to get home. But so I need a character of some kind that you want to do. I have homeless in here that get pulled up to do these. They steal the homeless to get genetic experiment on. And I have, down where the Super Collider was going to be, down north of Waxahachie. Mm-hmm. Well, I hadn't bought my house in that area because I had a job there as a technician.
Uh-huh.
And then it went kaput.
Oh.
But I love that area. I love the concept. So I'm using that as the evil guy's lair, antagonist's lair, even though it's all dumped in now. But I talked to the scientists and the guys, everything. So I need a character... it can be a homeless. It can be somebody that got experimented on. They could have powers. It could be just a minion.
Okay.
There's also motorcycles in my book.
How about just a name?
Sure.
Grace.
I was looking for a name for this character. I know exactly.
And Grace carries significance, which I think... could be folded well.
So it always carries significance.
But like the significance for this name could be folded well into the...
I think I know already here it's going to be.
Awesome.
So I'll tell you.
Okay.
When I get it.
Awesome.
See how that works. This is fun.
Yeah. Thanks for coming on.
Sure. Thank you. And, I appreciate it. I'm sorry I'm not the best-selling author in the world, but,
okay. Yeah, and let us know when your book is available.
Yeah.
And give me the link to your site, and I'll put it in the show notes.
I do have my anthologies on the site, so you can see what's there that I have short stories in. And I've done some poems and, all that sort of thing. But short stories, I think, is a good way to start, if you can end them.
Yeah, I've had some upheaval in my life just crazy upside down chasing after this and trying to get that done. And when things calm down a little bit, I'm going to attempt to write a short story per week.
Good luck.
Maybe per 2 weeks, but...
Well, Highland did that.
We'll see.
He wrote a short story a week. He sent it out. You know, he'd come back, he'd throw it in the trash and add another one. Yeah. Right, yeah. So, yeah, that's the way to do it.
Anyway.
Good luck.
Yeah, thanks. And,
I can't wait to read your books. I've got those tidbit night. Yeah. Is it Nightshade?
Nightshade Unicorn, yeah.
Unicorn. I can't wait to. I was showing them off to my friends at dinner.
Hopefully.
So, did you publish these yourself?
Uh-huh.
You did self-publish?
Yeah.
Oh, cool.
And I made that logo on the back for Grand Hill Media.
Oh, neat.
Grand Hill is from another story that I started writing years ago. So, yeah.
I think they'll do well. From what little bit I read in the front, I think it'll do. Because I don't buy, if I read the book and it's got 15 was words in the first paragraph, I'm like, no, I'm not reading this, you know. Mm-hmm. Just little things I look for because I was a proofreader for so long. And so I'm like, oh, okay, I'll take it.
Okay. Well, great. Okay. Thanks.
Thank you.
We'll cut it off there.
Thank you.
Thank you.